720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in for Patty. On pretty late, and before we went to the break and to the news, we talked about Chicago being a great town for a bunch of different things, certainly food as well. And you think of the food that we have here, so much of the food that makes its way all around the country, whether it's our produce or pork or cattle or all the corn and all the kind of things. Iowa is definitely one of those bread baskets for it. On the line with us now to kind of give us some insight into ways that that our farmers, if you're a farmer, you can farm almost anything. You adjust maybe if one crop is necessary over another or one kind of livestock. And they are just thinking outside the box here. Iowa's fish farmers. It's Maddie Oatman. She's a writer for Mother Jones. Maddie, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having me. So how are you guys tonight?
We're good. How are you? What's the temperature wherever it is that you are?
So I'm in San Francisco. It's kind of chilly. It's like mid-40s here.
Oh.
How about Chicago?
Zero.
Why don't you take a guess? Oh, yeah. You can either go regular temperature or you can go wind chill.
Oh.
Take
I don't envy that, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. In the summertime, though, in Chicago, it's very nice. We will rarely have some of the chilly times that you guys have in San Francisco in the summertime. So we've got that going for us.
Yeah, the 3 months out of the year that we get that.
Yeah. I mean, it's
no, it's so true. I always miss the warm evenings. We don't get those here, even in the summer. It's always chilly. So.
Well, we love the article that you wrote, and so let's talk a little bit about it because, you know, one of the many, we're inundated with gloom and doom when it comes to our news stories, whether it's, you know, challenges and crises and turmoil and conflict all around the world or some of those environmental things, whether it's global warming or just there's not going to be enough food to feed everyone. And when it comes to America, Iowa is one of those places that is part of the solution and not the problem. Growing food and now bringing in the fish side of things. Like, talk a little bit about what you discovered out there in Iowa.
Sure. So we are being asked to double our seafood consumption. Fish is, a pretty healthy food. And so now the USDA and the dietary guidelines recommends that people eat 2 servings of fish a week. However, the oceans are becoming less and less a good source for that fish because of a lot of different factors. And so these farmers in Iowa who are hog farmers, third generation hog farmers, they took a look at an old hog barn they had and realized they could use it to raise fish instead. And their operation was really successful at a smaller scale. They were able to raise barramundi, which is an Australian saltwater fish. And, they started selling it to restaurants and grocery stores around the region. And so now they're trying to scale up. And that could mean that they could be selling up to 10 million pounds of seafood a year in the Midwest.
Wow. You always have those transportation issues. And I know with their situation, they're having the fish, when they're small, kind of come in from Australia and they're actually growing them on the farm. But to not have to deal with, seafood being flown in, to have kind of a central location as far as supply going in the Midwest, is, I think it's going to be exciting. Well, how do you see that happening? Of course, it's going to be more fish for more people. You mentioned the health aspects. It's something that we should incorporate more of in our diet. Do you think that it's going to change the eating habits? Is it going to change the prices of fish if there's more of them?
Question. So actually a couple of people, have reached out to me after reading this article and said, my Blue Apron now includes, my Blue Apron membership now includes barramundi sometimes on the menu. So it seems like people are kind of shifting to possibly eating more seafood and even eating more barramundi now. I think in terms of cost, it's actually, seafood, we import 90% of our seafood, and a lot of that is really cheap fish coming from Asia, China, and Malaysia. And it's definitely, I don't know that the cost is necessarily going to drop just because we raise it locally in the U.S. I think there are a lot of reasons that we maybe want to do that because so much of that imported seafood is coming with all sorts of things that we don't really know what they are, like antibiotic resistant bacteria being some of those things.
Right. You can control the environment. You don't have to worry about mercury and some of the things that you would out in the wild. And when it comes to the Barramundi, is it a popular, and to let the listeners know that may not be completely familiar, I think that you've got a good candidate here because it's the size of a coho salmon that's pretty big. And then the flavor of a red snapper, which is a really popular fish. Is this a really popular fish in Australia? And then, or is this kind of, I don't want to say a lab created situation, or did they try to find, hey, this fish can kind of hold up to all of those things, whether it's the travel or the environmental changes or just living in Iowa, and it's a good candidate to be able to survive and make it to market?
Yeah. That's what's kind of fascinating about the Barramundi to me. It's thought to be a very robust, hardy species. And because it actually travels in the wild from ocean up rivers, it gets trapped in the billabongs in Australia. And so it's used to surviving in these low oxygen environments. So it's almost as if it's more likely to do well in a farmed environment because it has evolved to do well with less oxygen. So that to me was kind of a fascinating scientific element of this story.
Well, the family that you featured, the Nelsons, it's a third generation Iowa farming family. And what was the thought process and the reason for it in that part of the country and in that farming area? Things are, and decisions like that are made more based on practicality than, you know, kind of concern for the environment or trying to help people's health or things like that. This just seemed probably like a right business decision for the family and for the farm. But you were, you know, you got a chance to talk with them and learn about it. Why did they do it? Did they think, hey, this would be a good choice dollar-wise? And what made them, this is a big undertaking.
Yeah, really good point. So I think that the hog market really has ups and downs. And around 2008, 2009, when the Nelsons, that's the family I talked to, when they switched away from as much hog farming, the market had really soured. And so they were looking for other opportunities. So it was two cousins, Mark and Jeff Nelson, and they were at kind of a hog convention, and they saw a diagram of these feed dispensers that they were used to seeing, but they were actually hung over a pool of tilapia as opposed to, you know, a hog barn. And it kind of just, you know, the light bulb went off in Mark's eye, and he thought, well, we have this empty hog barn now. What if we tried fish instead? The cool thing is, the fish farming seems to be what is keeping their kids and their nieces and nephews in farming now, which I thought, you know, was also an exciting part of this story. It's not just about the fish. It's what this project is doing in keeping younger people excited about it. So I think from a practical standpoint, you know, it has novelty and it has, you know, momentum behind it right now. And it has investors and interest, obviously. They kind of attracted attention from this company, Vera Blue, that came in and is now helping them scale up the project. So
it's, I mean, it is really interesting. It's really cool the way that you kind of share that moment, that light bulb moment of inspiration, because it's the kind of thing that I could see happening either here in the city or closer, or maybe on a smaller scale with specialty fish that are hard to get, where you can go ahead and just kind of grow your own, because, you know, fish is very popular. And I think if there's more of it, and you mentioned the health properties and all those kind of things, but I was wondering, you know, what was it where they said, well, let's do this. It still sounds terrifying that they just saw this and said, like, we've got an empty barn. Let's fill it with fish from Australia. I was thinking that you may have said, you know, you remember that infomercial about the alpacas? Like, hey, would you like your own business? Alpacas have sensitive eyes. Right. And so then you have these things there. So I didn't know if there was a, you know, an Australian infomercial saying, like, grow your own Barramundis.
Right.
That's where it starts.
Well, you know, they actually started with a striped sea bass. So they didn't jump right into the Barramundi right away. And, you know, fish farming has been going on around the world and around the U.S. for a long time, usually at a much smaller scale. I think the largest fish farm is called Blue Ridge Aquaculture in Virginia, and they farm tilapia. But other than that, you know, you have a lot of kind of smaller mom-and-pop operations, and a lot of tilapia, which, you know, I think does sort of well for people, but, you know, a lot of people aren't that excited about tilapia, it seems like. So I think part of the Nelson's idea is also to bring in a species of fish that really tastes good. And I, you know, Barramundi gets really good feedback. I think it's buttery. It just has a little bit more going on.
I have to admit, that's first. I have never heard of the Barramundi fish before now. But and then I know tilapia is, you know, different schools of thought on that. Some people think
schools. It's a nice fish pun.
Unintentional, of course. But you know, tilapia, it's panned by some people. Some people like it. Do you feel like this, you know, this type of fish will really be something that spreads out throughout the U.S. and catches on, and people will be looking at that maybe more so than the tilapia?
It's possible. I mean, tilapia is really easy to raise, so I think the jury's out about how well Barramundi operations can do when they get big. But one thing to note is that the Nelson's actually, well, this company, Vera Blue, that is now sort of operating the Nelson's farm, they plan to actually have their own hatchery, so they will no longer be importing fish, you know, when they're 17 days old from Australia all the way across the world to the U.S. So they're kind of trying, they're going to try to actually hatch the fish here. And I think, you know, time will tell whether they can pull that off, but I think it'll be an important, you know, indicator of whether Barramundi can survive in the landlocked American states.
It's neat to see. You know, it is neat to see. It is one of those inspirational stories. And, of course, you know, America has this big, you know, a love affair with the farmer. And, you know, you want to find as many ways to keep them involved, relevant, supported, and supportive as we can. It's an exciting thing. I know that what they're doing and your story is going to be an inspiration to other farmers out there that may want to, you know, do that whole kind of, you know, 180 switch from what it is that they were doing, or maybe just incorporate some of this into what it is that they do, because, you know, we all have to kind of look at different options on the food side. I think the world as a whole has to look at some of that, ways to kind of improve what it is that we're doing and do more of it, especially when it comes to things like fish. So Maddie, I want to thank you for being a part of the program. For those you know, listeners that want to keep up with you and all your other stories, what other kind of things do you usually write on, and then where can they find you?
I write on, you know, food issues, also environmental issues and culture. So I try to find good news stories every so often, which can be tough. But basically you can go to motherjones.com. And the other thing I'm working on is a food podcast called Bite, and that's through Mother Jones. But if you just look up Bite on iTunes or Stitcher, you can hear our bi-monthly food podcast every other week, whatever that is.
So Maddie Oatman over there at motherjones.com and her podcast, Bite. Get out there and enjoy what it is that she's doing, as she has her hand on the pulse of the Barramundi scene, for sure.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the food issues going on in America. Maddie, thanks so much for, enjoy your warmer weather than what we have. And thanks thanks for being on the program tonight.
Yeah, thanks for your interest. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks. Have a good night. Good night.